Welcome to WORT's local news for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. I'm your host, Christina Leffring.
And I'm your host, Faye Parks. In tonight's news, Tony Robinson's loved ones celebrated his memory last night by unveiling a new mural in McPike Park. And Wisconsin's corrections secretary will retire tomorrow. An announcement that one advocacy group says came as a surprise amid ongoing discussions with corrections officials.
And in the second half, a conversation with an acclaimed youth mentor, the pros and cons of solar power, and the power of fiber arts.
Got around to watching one of the biggest, most...
This is Christina Leffring and Faye Parks with your local news, coming to you live from WORT Studios in downtown Madison during our winter pledge drive. And here are today's headlines. The winter weather has left the Great Lakes lacking its usual ice cover, and for now researchers can only speculate on the consequences. They say that the open lakes could warm up faster this spring, reports the Wisconsin State Journal, and that could damage the fish populations and cause widespread algae blooms. A faster warm-up, researchers say, could create warmer and cooler levels within the lakes, preventing oxygen from reaching the lower depths. And lower oxygen levels may reduce the plankton populations, a primary food source for whitefish and lake trout. The lack of ice cover also leaves fish egg clusters vulnerable to damage from winter storms. At this point, the ultimate impact is still a question mark, but researchers from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources call the loss of surface ice a fundamental change in the lake's ecosystem.
Until the legislature establishes pollution standards on so-called forever chemicals, regulators with the state's Department of Natural Resources cannot order polluters to clean up the contamination. That's thanks to a Court of Appeals ruling issued yesterday. The decision from the Appeals Court for the 2nd District effectively strips the DNR of its authority over PFAS testing and remediation, reports the Associated Press. State Attorney General Josh Call said the DNR will ask the state Supreme Court to review yesterday's ruling. Meanwhile, the state's $125 million PFAS trust fund remains untouched, 8 months after it was set aside in the latest budget. The legislature's powerful budget writing committee refuses to release the money to the DNR until lawmakers decide how it can be spent. PFAS are man-made fluorine compounds, commonly used as such items like cookware and firefighting foam. They're associated with cancer, low birth weight, and liver disease. And the compounds have been tested in municipal water systems across the state, including in Madison, Marinette, La Crosse, and Wausau, to name a few.
Senator Tammy Baldwin has released her first TV advertising spot in her re-election campaign. The 30-second ad promotes legislation she wrote that requires the use of U.S.-made materials in federal infrastructure projects. The spot will air statewide. Baldwin is prepared to spend over $1 million on advertising in the opening weeks of her campaign, reports the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. 2 weeks ago, businessman Eric Hovde, a Republican, announced he is challenging Baldwin for the Senate seat. Hovde has two spots on the air, a 30-second ad announcing his candidacy, and a 60-second retrospective on his history in Wisconsin. A Senate Democrats campaign group countered that ad with a spot labeling Hovde as an out-of-touch millionaire, with his primary business based in California. Baldwin's re-election is viewed as critical to the Democrats maintaining control of the Senate in the coming years.
Wisconsin employment numbers set several records in January, according to a report from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. The state added 5,100 non-farm jobs and 4,000 private jobs. That brings the totals in both categories to historic highs, according to a statement from the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Total employment also set a record, with the state's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate at a reported 3.2% for the month. Total labor force participation in the state was reported at 65.9%, 3.4 percentage points above the national rate.
Two low-income apartment buildings in Madison are poised to shut down, but some tenants will get financial assistance from the city to relocate, reports the Capital Times. The Tree Lane and Rethke Terrace apartments are operating on emergency funding from U.S. Bank, but the buildings could cease operations in late April or early May if someone doesn't come forward to buy them out of receivership. Both complexes are about 50% vacant at this time. Most of the tenants receive so-called Section 8 rent assistance. On Tuesday, the city allocated $424,000 to help tenants who do not receive rent subsidies.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison's new engineering building is just part of a package Governor Tony Evers signed into law yesterday. That's after a legislative leader and the UW system president resolved their policy impasse over diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The $347 million engineering building project is now in its design phase. The Madison campus will also benefit from renovations on three dormitory buildings and steam utility replacement. Elsewhere in the UW system, two academic buildings on the Whitewater campus will undergo extensive repairs, and uninhabitable buildings at Platteville, Eau Claire, and Green Bay will be demolished. Evers also signed a measure granting the UW system a bigger share of the tuition reciprocity revenue the state receives from Minnesota students enrolled at UW campuses. That money has been going into the state's general fund rather than the UW budget.
And those were your local news headlines. We turn now to two special guests, John K. Wilson and Sean Boll, in the studio, who want to tell you a little something about WORT and our pledge drive.
Thank you so much. I'm Sean, here with John, and we are here running the pledge drive for the next hour or so. We are trying to get a couple new donors. That's our goal for this hour.
Let me correct you real quick. This hour, we're looking for 8 to 10 donors.
Oh, no way.
Yeah,
okay.
New hour, new goal.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, so if you call in the next few minutes, you will be part of supporting this station for the next foreseeable future here. We are a community-supported radio station, and that means that all our endeavors are supported directly by donations from people like you.
It's true. And if you're listening right now and you're deciding, you know what, this right now during the local news is the time that I want to make my gift to WORT, well, that's great. And there are a few different ways you can do that. You can call up at 608-256-2001, or you can go online to make a donation at WORTFM.org, and you can make a one-time donation if that's what you're feeling right now, or you can sign up to make an ongoing monthly donation. That's great for WORT because it helps us, you know we have consistent little bits of funding coming in throughout the year, and it's good for you because it means we have to spend less time on air asking for your support. I mean, we do it because we care, because we believe in WORT, and we're sharing with you some of the reasons why we think you should support WORT too. But, you know, if we could just have it come in every month, that's, you know, a little bit easier for everybody.
That's right, John. I want to remind you all that last hour I set a goal. I want to do a little contest, see what the farthest away listener that donates can be. Right now that is wide open. So if you donate, please comment where you're donating from. We're really curious about that, and we want to hear a little bit about you folks. The furthest away person who donates by the end of the hour will receive a special shout out. And as far as that goes, when you're donating, you can comment all sorts of things. Tell us what your favorite show is. Tell us what you like about the station, and we'll read that on air. We want to hear from you, and you can voice yourself directly on the radio. One more time, that's going to be 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
And now back to the news.
Yesterday marked the 9-year anniversary of the killing of Tony Robinson. Robinson, a teenager, was killed by a Madison police officer. If he was alive today, he'd be in his late 20s. Last night, Robinson's family and friends celebrated his memory by unveiling a new mural in McPike Park. Reporter Ella Saff was there.
The mural has three panels. The center panel depicts Robinson's face in shades of purple and black, while the surrounding panels contain quotes attributed to Robinson. They read, "You ever have the feeling you are going to live forever?" and "Just watch, I'm going to change the world." The mural might be familiar to some on the Isthmus. It was originally painted in the summer of 2020 as part of a public arts program on State Street highlighting artists of color. That program was promoted by Black Lives Matter protests, where a frequent cry was, "Fire Matt Kenny." The mural dedicated on Wednesday is a print of that mural. It's the work of community artist Danielle Mialke, Amira Kerr, and co-collaborator Alana Kerr. And it'll hang in McPike Park for 1 year before moving to the Commonwealth Developments building on Williamson Street. The gathering on Wednesday was a celebration of Robinson's life and legacy. You could feel the love the crowd had for Robinson, but also the anger, pain, and frustration.
What's his name?
Tony Terrell.
What's his name?
Tony Terrell.
No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
No racist.
Police.
No racist.
Police.
Officer Matt Kenny shot and killed Robinson, shooting him 7 times after concerned friends had called for a wellness check. The city of Madison later settled a civil rights lawsuit with Robinson's family, paying out over $3 million. But Dane County District Attorney Ismael Ozan declined to prosecute Kenny, and he remains a Madison police officer today. In the 9 years since Robinson's death, his grandmother Sharon Irwin has been holding memorials and fighting for legal justice for her grandson.
It's time, in some respects, to put a little joy back in my life, you know? And, I want to dedicate the mural to my granddaughter, Kyla, and to my grandson, Tony. I call him Terrell. Without having to talk to you about how angry I might get about the 9 years of trying to move forward in courts that don't make no sense to me.
Last year, a Dane County judge refused to move forward with a new petition brought by Irwin. That petition used a little-used state law that allows civilians to directly file a criminal complaint if a prosecutor is unwilling to do so. Irwin and a team of attorneys argued that forensic evidence was enough to prompt a judge to appoint a special prosecutor to further investigate the case. A Dane County judge disagreed. Irwin says she's not giving up in her fight for justice. She maintains that Kenny violated several standard operating procedures 9 years ago, including the department's procedure for use of deadly force. She also maintains that Kenny has had a history of violating the department's operating procedures, pointing out that Kenny shot and killed another man in 2007. For that, he was also exonerated from wrongdoing and later received a Medal of Valor for it. Now, Irwin plans to file a complaint with the Police and Fire Commission this spring, with the help of the law collective Small Acts. Kristen Matthews, a board member for the Social Justice Center, helped to organize the mural dedication and has been a central figure in this fight for justice.
I'm just letting you know, first of all of the evidence lives, and again, the only thing we've ever asked is for people to look at the evidence. The evidence clearly shows exactly what happened that day. So if you want to look at any of that, we've got a Facebook group, In Pursuit of Justice. Matt Kenny Must Be Held Accountable. It's open. Anybody can join it there. Also at inpursuitofjustice.net, all of the evidence lives there as well. Please look. Please share.
Both websites Matthews mentioned will be linked in the online version of this story. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Ella Saff.
Secretary Kevin Carr will retire from the Wisconsin Department of Corrections tomorrow. This announcement comes the same week as another inmate was found dead at the Waupun Correctional Institute, and the U.S. Department of Justice launches a probe into allegations of drug smuggling and financial crimes at Waupun. Sarah Gabler has the story.
Last Friday, Wisconsin Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr announced his retirement. Secretary Carr has served in this role, overseeing the largest state department, since he was appointed by Governor Evers in 2018. Before that, he served as U.S. Marshal in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and then spent 30 years with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department. During his time with the Department of Corrections, Secretary Carr made a number of improvements, including expanding educational opportunities for incarcerated persons, increasing eligibility for the Earned Release Program, and expanding medication-assisted treatment. In the spring, the state's correctional officer academies will graduate over 200 new officers to address ongoing staffing shortages. In a statement, Governor Evers announced that the search to fill Carr's position is already underway and that the governor expects to announce Carr's replacement in the coming weeks. That has some advocacy groups surprised. David Liners is the executive director of Wisdom, a multi-faith, statewide network of organizations working toward racial and economic justice. Liners says he's concerned about the status of ongoing projects with the Department of Corrections.
We're concerned about a lot of things. There were things that were sort of in process that he was working on that we had been talking to him about, including things like reforms of solitary confinement and things like looking at implementing more restraints on locking people up for crimeless revocations.
Meanwhile, the department faces ongoing allegations of inhumane conditions and correctional facilities brought on by a shortage of correctional officers. Currently, there is a 26% vacancy rate for correctional officers and sergeants at adult institutions. That says several prisons are under an effective lockdown, which the Department of Corrections characterizes as, quote, modified movement, unquote. Under modified movement, prisoners have limited showers, little contact with family members, and limited access to law library materials, among other restrictions, Lonnie Story tells the Cap Times. Attorney Lonnie Story represents the families of three men who died in Waupun Correctional Institution in the last 8 months. He also represents the 10 lead plaintiffs from Waupun who have filed a class action lawsuit. Now, a fourth person has died in Waupun, officials announced earlier this week. Attorney Story alleges that the Department of Corrections intentionally withheld announcing the death of the fourth man in late February until after Secretary Kevin Carr's retirement announcement on March 1st.
I believe the Department of Corrections just, for all intents and purposes, suppressed that information from the media until Mr. Carr announced his retirement.
Secretary Carr is a named defendant in Story's lawsuits. Story says he's crafting a motion for injunctive relief on an emergency basis because of the most recent death. He also says his clients are being retaliated against for bringing suit. And just this week, nearly a dozen prison employees at Waupun have been put on suspension due to a U.S. Department of Justice investigation into the smuggling of drugs and cell phones. It's believed to be connected with financial crimes at the institution, reports the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Earlier this week, Wisdom sent an open letter to Governor Evers asking for the governor to take feedback from stakeholders in determining Carr's replacement. David Liners says that
the governor needs to set up a process where he's hearing from, actually from people in prison, that he's hearing from the people who work for the Department of Corrections, from the corrections officers, from others, that he's hearing from family members, that he's hearing from organizations like ours or Just Dane and all kinds of other people who have a real interest and who really understand the prison.
Kevin Hoffman, a spokesperson for the Department of Corrections, tells WORT that a leadership team will continue to oversee the department until a new secretary is found.
He had been considering retirement for several months, and discussions with the governor's office began as far back as mid-February. In the interim, Deputy Secretary Jared Hoy and Assistant Deputy Secretary Melissa Roberts will work together to oversee the department until a new appointment is made. And this includes overseeing any current initiatives or reforms that are already underway.
But finding a replacement for Secretary Carr could be difficult, as the Republican-controlled Senate continues to block Evers' appointees. To date, Republican lawmakers have effectively fired 13 of the governor's appointees since he took office in 2019. For WORT News, I'm Sarah Gabler.
It's now 6:24 p.m., and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. We turn now to two special guests in the studio, John K. Wilson and Sean Bull, who want to tell you a little something about the WORT Winter Pledge Drive.
Thanks, Faye and Christina. That's right. We will be back at you in just a few minutes for more local news. But right now, we're just taking a brief pause to ask you out there, you listeners, to support WORT and everything that we do here. It's our... I was going to say fall, but no, it's our winter. It's March.
It is still winter, even though it doesn't really feel like it walking outside today.
Yeah, it's our winter membership pledge, donation drive, whatever you want to call it, support drive. We come on every few months on the air to ask you to give financial support to everything that we do here at WORT, because really, literally, it's what makes everything get on the air. Without support of listeners, listeners or of web readers or of people who don't listen to us at all or read us at all, but just like the idea of us being there, whatever the case may be, you know, we wouldn't exist without you. And so we're asking right now for you to make a donation, make a gift to support WORT.
And of course, when you donate, you get some gifts in return. We've been talking all night about all sorts of rewards at different tiers you can get. We have new this time, a WORT branded crossbody bag. It's a little bigger than what you might think of a typical fanny pack as, meant to be worn, I believe, over the shoulder. It's got an adjustable paracord strap. It comes in this blue ripstop sort of fabric, and it has two pockets. One in the front is zippered up. I'm going to give a little demonstration.
That's some good Foley work right there.
I think that came across. Anyway, it's a nice quality zipper. Seals really nicely. Doesn't get stuck. Easy to kind of whip open and take your phone out, whatever you might be carrying in this bag for sort of a day out on the town. And then as a sort of second secret pocket, it's got one that would be sort of up against your body. It's got a Velcro shut pocket that...
Ooh, there you go. That's nice.
I like doing sound effects when we can get some gifts in the studio here. So, so the crossbody bag is available at the $65 one-time donation level. Features a navy with a WORT logo in orange, sort of complementary color scheme there. If you're curious, 6 3/4 inches by 9.5 inches and about 1.5 inches deep when you completely cram it full of stuff. But it's a very slim bag, and you can take it easily with you wherever you're on the go. So
and that is not all. If you make a donation at that level, you can get the bag, but you also get the satisfaction of knowing that you are supporting WORT Community Radio.
That's correct.
And really, that gift is just... it's beyond value. It's priceless.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really does. So if you want to make that gift, let me share the phone number real quick.
Yes,
and you can get back to the bag. you make your donation at 608-256-2001 or at WORTFM.org.
I was just going to throw out there, you know, think about as you're flipping through the radio dial, you know, if WORT did not at some point make its fundraising goals, and we're doing all right here, but you know, I think about this with all sorts of pledge drives. If we weren't here, what would you listen to? I'm not sure.
Podcasts?
There's not a one-to-one alternative.
No way.
We're in a really unique and special position here in the Madison community, and I think that's something worth celebrating and supporting.
Yeah, so once again, 608-256-2001 or WORTFM to make your gift, FM.org to make your gift.
The time is now 6:32, and you're listening to the local news on WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. I'm your host, Faye Parks, and I'm here with Christina Leffring. Thank you for joining us tonight. Michael Johnson is the president and CEO of Boys and Girls Club Dane County, and in 2022, he was named In Business Executive of the Year for his youth mentorship work. In this edition of Out of D Box, Johnson sits down with host D Star to discuss his commitment to personal growth and community support.
What's up, everybody? This is your host, D Star, here with
Michael Johnson from Boys and Girls Club.
Michael Johnson, the 2022 In Business Executive of the Year, Michael Johnson.
Yeah, real honor, man, to like get an award like that, especially from, you know, In Business Magazine. But it's a testament to, you know, we have an amazing staff here, an amazing group of volunteers who help us do our work here, you know, at Boys and Girls Clubs. And then we have an amazing board who folks who are committed to helping children and families in our community. And so it's a real honor to receive that kind of recognition.
Thing that's got the whole city buzzing, the Pay It Forward campaign. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, man, when I was a kid growing up in the projects, I didn't I didn't like Christmas, man, because my mother was a beautiful woman, but my mother had, she was on very limited income. She had schizophrenia. She was on Social Security. She was a single mother, and she did everything she could to try to provide for our family. And even though we lived in the projects, I used to see my friends like get these nice little bikes and all these toys, and they had Christmas trees, and they had nice designer shoes. And we didn't have that as kids. And it always bothered me that while I felt like my mother did so much, I knew we didn't have much, right? So I said, if I
ever— And that's very rare because as a kid, when you grow up poor, you actually don't know that you're poor way later on.
Yeah, I didn't really know until I started working at 13. I worked for a guy who owned a grocery store across the street. Mm-hmm. And he had invited me to a city called Glenview, Illinois. At the time, I think it was one of the richest suburbs outside of Chicago.
What was the name of the store?
It was called Cojones. It was owned by Peter. I know, man.
That's a wild name.
Wild name. And it was owned by a guy named Peter Goshes, who now lives in Kenosha. And I remember he took me to his house in Glenview, and I couldn't believe. It's interesting because when I described it to him, he said, Mike, my house really wasn't that nice. And I said, Pete, I got to go back and see that house because what I remember was a swimming pool in the backyard, huge, gigantic rooms. All his kids had individual rooms. They had a gourmet kitchen. And, like, I lived in a three-bedroom apartment with cockroaches.
Exactly.
And I remember going to that house like, oh, my God, this is filthy rich. Like, that's what it felt like to me. When he tells the story, he said, no, it was a modest $500,000 house. Now, modest $500,000 in the 1990s,
right.
It wasn't modest. It may have been modest for some upper middle class people, but it was like it opened my eyes. It opened my eyes up. And so he just exposed me to something I had never seen. It made me dream bigger.
Your Pay It Forward initiative has inspired the city. And it actually has inspired us here. So we would actually like to pay it forward to you today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we have a local artist. Her name is Danny. She actually helped us create this gift that we want to present to you.
I appreciate that. How did y'all get these? Y'all went to Puma?
We do our research, man.
Oh, my God. That is dope. JoJo 23. Hold on. Oh, my God. I got to share that. Oh, my God. That is dope. Wow. Oh, my God. That is super. I'm putting some of these in a display case, and I'm going to put these in there. I got to text this to her real quick. That is super. That is super, Joe. And, you know, and I love this couple because they are absolutely amazing. So I just got to send this to them real quick. Wow.
Well, you pay it forward in our community so much. We felt like that we really wanted to honor you and give you something for all the things that you do for the community.
Man, this is dope. I appreciate it. Like, to me, this is very thoughtful. The time that, you know, she spent putting this together. John and Joellen, they mean a lot to me because, you know, one of the reasons we're able to do so many things in this community, a lot of times they're one of a few people that I can reach out to who actually are committed to providing a helping hand to somebody else. So it's pretty, pretty, pretty cool. So thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, we got sidetracked.
That was D-Star sitting down with Boys and Girls Club Dane County's CEO, Michael Johnson. You can hear the rest of their conversation on the Out of D-Box podcast.
We now turn to John K. Wilson and Sean Bull, who want to tell you a little something about how your support makes the local news happen during our winter pledge drive.
Thank you so much. We are still here awaiting your calls eagerly. If you want to donate to us, we are a community supported radio. So, of course, we would love to have some of your donations to support us for this winter season. The number to call for that is 608-256-2001, or you can go online at WORTFM.org. If you donate, there are all sorts of great gifts you can get in return as a token of our appreciation for your continued support. Let's see, what haven't we talked about yet? Ooh, okay, we have, you know, it's been nice out, but we might get hit with another couple cold snaps yet. We have a sort of knit hat, a beanie sort of thing. It comes in black, and it's got a patch on the front of it that is actually designed by Adrian, one of our key members here.
Who's also here taking phone calls.
Yeah, yeah. So you can, as you call in, talk to her about the patch you're going to get, or at the $75 level, the hat with the patch on it. So that's pretty cool. It's got sort of an old-timey microphone in the center. It's a circular patch with WORT 89 FM on the top, and then Madison, Wisconsin, established 1975, sort of circling around the bottom. Orange and black looks super neat, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if you're looking for that hat, or you're just looking to support WORT's programming, whether it's the music or news or other, you know, local art and culture programming, whatever, you can make your donation. We're looking for 8 to 10 more folks here during this 6 p.m. local news hour here. Hoping to hopefully get a couple folks who are interested in signing up as monthly donors, which, you know, a little whatever amount you choose comes out of your accounts every month, makes it easy for everybody. Like we said, Adrian is here taking calls. We also have Ralph taking calls. We want to give a shout out to Bonzo, the great restaurant in town, who provided everybody here in the studio some delicious food this evening while we're on the air. You know, fuel us to be here asking you for your support for WORT Community Radio. It's good stuff. And again, yeah, we come on air a few times a year asking you to support the radio that you're listening to right now, the radio that you like for some reason. Our theme this drive is another weirdo for WORT, and we're not saying that pejoratively about it. You probably, hopefully, wear that as a badge of honor that you are our type of weirdo, somebody that really enjoys, you know, all of our community radio or just a little piece of it, whatever. We got such, you know, sort of various and interesting stuff that we put on the air. And that's the spirit of community radio, but we couldn't do that without your support.
Yeah, I mean, we are able to platform some really great stuff that otherwise, you know, you may never have found. Like, I think Out of the Box podcast is a great example that you hear Thursdays with us. That's fantastic award-winning reporting by D-Star that I feel like we're able to get more people listening to that, and that's a great thing to be able
fun.
To do things.
I like that segment.
So, yeah. One more time, 608-256-2001 and WORTFM.org. We're standing by to take your calls.
Thanks, guys. And please keep your pledges coming as we go back to local news and commentary.
Are you solar curious? Wondering what all the solar power hubbub is about? In this episode of The House Always Wins, Sunshine Lovers Allie and John discuss the pros and cons of getting your own solar power.
I call it housework, cause it's light work.
What you done here?
I'ma throw shapes, filling the bass till my feet hurt.
Hello, everybody. I'm John.
And I'm Allie. And welcome to The House Always Wins, where you can learn cool stuff about your house.
We all love cool stuff.
So, you know, John, we've made some tangential references to solar power in several of our shows, and I think it's time we discuss that directly here on our show today. I'm guessing there's a lot of people out there who are solar curious and want to understand what all the hubbub is about.
It's true. There's probably lots of solar curious folks out there, and there is a hubbub these days about solar PV. It's in the news all the time. You're reading about these giant new arrays that are going in here, there, and everywhere and providing all this power and powering 10,000 homes. It's really growing like crazy right now. And there are enormous tax credits for it, and it's probably something that most people, if they knew more about it, they might actually consider it for their home. Let's start, though, with the basic concept, right? What is a solar PV system, and how does it work?
Let me try taking that.
All right.
So it's solar PV. PV stands for photovoltaic, and it's producing electricity when the sun shines on the solar panel. It's really that simple.
Wow, yeah.
So the main thing is, when the sun shines on the panel, some electrons are flowing. It's about the sun shining on it. It's not about heat. So that's not an issue here in Wisconsin or anything like that because of the cold. It's really about the sun. The beautiful thing about the system, it produces its electricity in what's called direct current, which is similar to what a battery uses or what your car uses. But our houses use alternating current. So all of our electricity has to be converted. And that happens through a device called an inverter that converts DC electricity to AC electricity. And then that electricity will run directly to your house's electric panel and power things in your home. Now, if your panels happen to be producing more electricity than you're using at some moment, then the typical system is one that sends the excess electricity to the electrical grid or to the utility as a way of sort of storing or using that electricity later on.
Right.
And so you can actually make some money from that excess electricity because the utility has to pay you for producing it. That can be pretty nice.
But oh, yeah.
I just want to clarify that the sun has to shine on the panels to be producing electricity.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you don't get to have electricity at night.
Exactly.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, that system is called grid tied, where it uses both the grid and your solar panels to create electricity. I've got that system. I love it. And it's cool because it literally your meter runs backwards.
Cool.
When you're producing electricity, and it's really pretty awesome. And my utility bills show that too. And some months, the utility, they owe me money for the electricity, often offset by my gas usage though. So they've never like had to pay me, but I'm definitely working on that. That said, my utility bills went from $160 to $180 a month to $30 a month or less. It's huge savings. And then over the next 6 or 7 years, all that savings will pay for the cost of the system I installed. And since these systems really, they don't have any moving parts, there's not a lot on them to break down, quote unquote, they last a long time. So I'm hoping, you know, that I'll eventually make good money from these for years to come in my retirement. There are other types out there. There's ones that have giant battery system that stores the extra electricity instead of the grid. They're not as common, but they can be a great option if you're building a new home out in a boonies somewhere, though.
Absolutely. I've used one in a little land in Mexico for years, and there is no electrical infrastructure where this land is, so any electricity we produce has to go to the batteries for storage and use later, so we get to have electricity at night too.
And don't you run a blender that you make a really nice mixed drinks in?
Nice pina coladas coming out of that.
Your pina coladas are made from sunshine, is that what I'm hearing?
That's 100% what you're hearing. So, John, let's talk about the tax incentives that are trying to encourage people to put these systems on their homes. Right off the top, you can get 30% back. So if you paid, say, $10,000 for your system, which I think is a pretty low number for these systems, the government will give you $3,000 back. Now, this will show up on your taxes, so you're going to have to wait to get that money, but that's still a significant savings, not chicken feed.
We should probably speak, though, to homes that might not be good candidates, though, and there are some.
For sure. I mean, first off, you need to have access to the sun. And some homes, if you're surrounded, you have a single-story home, you got a bunch of oak trees in the yard that shade your roof, probably not going to be a really great place for solar panels. And I wouldn't suggest chopping down a bunch of trees to do this. You need a good 8 hours of direct sunshine on the panels for it to really start to make sense. That's one thing to consider. A proper solar installer would be able to evaluate your roof for its solar potential.
Right.
You know, the other thing to think about is if you're not planning on staying in your current house for very long, it might not make financial sense, as there's no guarantee you'll recover the money you put into it when you sell the house. It does increase the value of the home, but it's a bit nebulous. Probably doesn't increase the value of your home as much as the system costs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that kind of speaks to the other potential downside. It's got a pretty high upfront cost. The typical PV system is going to run at least $10,000, but can easily go in the $20,000 and more.
And more, yeah.
Yeah, upfront costs. There are some low-cost loans available or low-interest loans available, and that can depend on where you live. For example, the city of Madison runs a program called MADIG Sun.
MADIG Sun?
S-U-N.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Which can help somebody, if you're not super familiar, find a contractor, help with the financing, just as an educational and financing option for people in Madison, for example, and especially if you don't have $20,000 laying around waiting to be burned.
And another potential downside is that, well, a solar array is kind of a bit in your face, kind of, and not always the most decorative part of your home, shall we say. folks who have a strong interest in their house looking just so may not be keen on the look. You know, personally, I love the look, especially when I look at my utility bill going way down. But also, if your roof is old, it doesn't make sense to put a solar array on it because you'll have to remove the solar panels to replace the roof. I mean, they can then be remounted again, but that will add cost to the roofing job. All said, though, it's still something that is definitely worth checking out if you like low utility bills or you have a keen sense of doing right by the environment.
If it's something you might be interested in and you're in the city of Madison, you can start by going to Madison's, which is madisonsolar.com. It's MadisonSolar.com. A lot of great info there and a way to start the ball rolling. If you're outside of the city of Madison, a great place to start would be renewwisconsin.org. Lots of good info there and also a great place to start.
If you have any other questions about this or any other topics you'd like us to talk about, reach out to us at thehousealwayswins@wortfm.org. So thanks for tuning in. But I'm gonna throw shade if I don't get paid for this
housework. AJ Bennett is the sole proprietor of Midwestern Cryptid, an online crochet shop where you can buy her creations. In this episode of Radio Chipstone, AJ tells feature contributor Jennifer Fields the deep inspiration for her work.
I look at crochet as a form of meditation, and almost on like really bad days, it is like my salvation. Like, it is what saves me from going off the deep end and giving in to those really dark thoughts, because it is something I can focus on. And then I finish a project and I'm like, cool, I made a thing. And then I can start something else immediately.
So then, AJ, does that project become keeper of whatever those thoughts were?
I've actually never thought of it that way. I think it's more so just an act to keep part of my mind busy to distract from the chaos that is life sometimes.
But there's DNA. When you make something, I honestly believe your DNA is in it. Mm-hmm. And if you're having those thoughts and this object, this garment comes out of that thought, is it difficult to like part with that DNA? Is it difficult to part with that?
It's like, all right, this is what I was dealing with while making this, and this product helped me process those thoughts. There are definitely some items that if I've been making it for a really long time, I am really hesitant to let it go, or I will duplicate it because I liked it so much and then give the other one to the customer. There are things where I make so many things in a single day where it's like, okay, these things all hold those feelings, but how do I let go of it and move forward?
What is it about yarn that gets you, that frees you from those thoughts?
So I've been crocheting since I was about 13 years old. It has been one of those constant hobbies. I like yarn because you take this string that is like familiar. Everyone knows what yarn is or what it looks like. And then you can turn that into something completely different, something that can take on almost a life of its own. Like, I've recently started making like cute little critters, and I'm like, oh my god, that's so cute, but so different from like a crocheted top or a sweater that is just something to keep you cozy.
Would it be fair or even make sense to say that there are days when crocheting is what gets you out of the bed?
Oh, 100%. Like, there are days. Like, I have really bad insomnia, chronic pain. Like, so I'd wake up, mornings are rough. But when I can get up, I make my coffee, I feed the annoying orange cat because he has been screaming at me for an hour. And I can sit down and start a new project or resume the project that I have been working on and feel good about producing something and being like, okay, I don't feel good today, but I can put my energy into creating this thing that I'm going to give to someone, and I can feel good about that.
Is crocheting something that it's not a panacea. It doesn't make everything better, but does it do something that sort of reaffirms that sense of self and ability?
It absolutely does, because I started getting sick over a decade ago. I am going to be 31 next month. This is what I've always known. And I've lost my ability to work, to be able to like do all those normal things, but I can still do this thing that I love and that brings me happiness and gets me, like, crocheting has opened doors that I never expected. Like, I did a trade the other day with a friend for crocheted things for a tattoo. Like, that was something I never thought was going to happen, but that to me is so cool that there are people who like my craft enough that they are willing to trade what they do and what they love for that. Like, that feels so special.
It's not a fallback, it's a finding self.
Absolutely. Like, if you know me, you know that crochet is part of who I am. Like, it's not just a thing that I do. Like, I am that crochet girl, and
it's a part of your fiber.
He's here all week, folks, because they're married.
This man's got the audacity. This is my life, is this.
It's now 6:55 p.m., and you're listening to the Handcrafted Local News on WORT. Thanks for staying tuned to the localist news around. Our guests this evening, John K. Wilson and Sean Bull, have one last word, and hopefully some people to thank. What's the news, Sean and John?
Well, right off the bat, we do have somebody to thank. We want to give a shout out to Matthew from Madison, who gave a donation online to support WORT's programming. Thank you so much, Matthew. And everybody else out there listening, now's the time. Now's the perfect time to make your donation to support WORT-FM.
Indeed. Yes, we are still running a contest for who can donate from the farthest distance away from our station. Matthew is currently in the lead with around 6-ish miles. We won't say more. Privacy is important. But we know that our signal goes out to about 40 miles, so there's still time and there's still plenty of distance. One of you out there could be farther and could swoop in at the last minute here.
Right, and you can be anywhere in the world, and you can make your donation by going to WORTFM.org, or you can pay for a really expensive long-distance phone call at 608-256-2001, or if you're local, that phone call is free. You know, frankly, in the age of cell phones and everything, I don't know how much more long distance is or whatever, but maybe at some point somebody will do a story about that on WORT, because we get all sorts of crazy and interesting stuff on community radio.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to donate, either by phone, online, either way is great. If you donate, of course, we have lots of great gifts that we can thank you with. One I haven't talked about yet, and we're talking about listening wherever you are. Sometimes you're not by a radio. You know, it's harder to get a radio someplace.
I'm always by a radio.
You can play it out of your phone, but like the speakers aren't the best, so you could augment that. At the $80 one-time donation level, you can get a Jupiter brand Bluetooth speaker. It's a small sort of smart speaker size that you see around people's homes, about 2¾ inches around, and it's got WORT branding on it. It's rechargeable. It's got Bluetooth kind of range, so you can have it set on a counter, walk away a little bit. Our radio will come through loud and clear. It's a great augment to take it WORT with you out in the world.
Yeah, so make your donation to support WORT's programming and maybe use your gift to listen to WORT's programming. Snag that radio or one of our other gifts and feel good that you're supporting WORT. You can call us up to make that donation at 608-256-2001 or go online, click the donate button. Wish we had a donut button. Again, that's at WORTFM.org. We really appreciate all of your support here during our pledge drive.
Yeah, I mean, what makes this place special is the community. So whether you donate or not, we appreciate you for taking the time to listen to us tonight. Thank you so much.
Once again, that number is 608-256-2001, or go online, look for that donut button at WORTFM.org. Almost done with the hour here, looking for as many more people as we can get to make that donation, you know, or later, whenever works for you. Make that donation at 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. And thank you.
Thanks, guys. And thank you for supporting WORT Live Local News at 6 p.m. Keep those pledges coming. Russ Mackey wrote your headlines. Your reporters tonight were Ella Saff and Sarah Gabler. Special thanks to feature contributors D. Starr, John Stephanie, Ali Barani, and Jennifer Fields. Engineer Ken Brady got the news on the air. I produce this newscast, and Shelley Pittman is the news director at WORT. I'm your host, Faye Parks.
And I'm Christina Leffring. Up next is the Perpetual Notion Machine. Good night.